Would you pray with me? O Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of each of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Well, if you recall from last week, I told you that we had embarked on a sermon series that was called What the World Needs Now. Obviously, the punchline to that is love, sweet love. You all know that. I chose this sermon series for this period of time because it seemed timely to me. It seems timely to me in the face of COVID and isolation and separation and all that sort of stuff. It seems timely to me in the face of racial tension, and it seems timely to me in the face of social unrest and looting and all of that sort of thing. Certainly no one here can deny that what the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. And I mentioned last week that the original take on that song was done by Jackie DeShannon. She's been somewhat lost to time, had a lovely voice, an English lady. And so we thought that for today, since we did something different last week in terms of putting that music up there, we thought today that we would put the original up there with Jackie DeShannon. So let's just take a minute and watch her and listen to her. Gotta love the hairdo, don't you? I was thinking it reminds me a lot of the senior pictures in my high school yearbook. That's Jackie DeShannon. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. There's a In my opinion, no book better suited to explore the promise and the power of love than the book of Ruth, the one that you just heard Bonnie reading from a few minutes ago. It's a little book. It's just sort of tucked there in the Old Testament, kind of hard to find. A little book. It's a small story about a family. But it speaks clearly in a world as needful as ours is of a God of fierce inclusivity, of a God of mighty and saving love. Love is a many-splendored thing, says the song, and Ruth attests exactly to that. It attests that love is indeed God's greatest gift. Faith, hope, and love, these remain, and the greatest of these is love, right? Love in its many and varied forms of expression is God's greatest gift to you and to me. Now, Ruth truly takes place in a world where there's just too little love. Listen to that opening line again. In the days when the judges ruled. In the days when the judges ruled. Well, we need to know a little bit about what that was like. This book starts purposefully with this because, you see, it was a difficult, challenging, loveless time. Those days look like what we see in the book of Judges. And if you've ever read that, it's kind of like a brutal whipping. What happens in Israel, there is no king in Israel in these days. This is prior to the kingship. And so a judge rises up. And a judge, typically from this book, is fair and honest and godly and reestablishes the rule of God throughout Israel. And that occurs during the judge's reign. But when the judge and Israel follows along and there's this period of faithfulness, and then when the judge dies, then that time is eclipsed and Israel slides back into all sorts of violent and ungodly behaviors. The book shows how it is that we really are when we are indeed ungoverned, when we are indeed without the rule of God and God's love. So it's a harsh look at the world, and it's a loveless age and environment offering scant protection for the weak and the underprivileged, which is exactly the folks we're going to meet in the book of Ruth. You might say that it's not unlike our own time. You might say that really clearly. The final verse of the book is absolutely chilling. If you're not familiar with it, let me share it with you. In those days, there was no king in Israel. All the people did what was right in their own eyes. All the people did what was right in their own eyes. Chilling, right? Every man for himself. And if you're on the margins, say an outsider, or say a woman perhaps, a woman without a man, then it's even more brutal. That's the world, that's the backdrop against which our story takes place. You see, love was on trial in Israel in those days, just as it is in our country now. And that's what's behind the story as it's behind our story in our time. In the days when the judges were judging. That's what Ruth and her family are up against. And as if that's not bad enough, the end of that first sentence was, there was a famine in the land. There was a famine in the land. We find that out immediately. So Ruth and her husband and her two sons, who were living in Bethlehem, which ironically means house of bread, are driven out. Not only is it an awful social situation for them, now there is no food. There is a famine on the land. There's no ability to raise food. And so they head for Moab. Now you need to know a little bit about that. Moab is across the river, out of Israelite territory. And the Moabites are related to Israelites, through Lot. You remember Lot? Abraham's nephew, right? That's where Lot settled. These were Lot's people. And there's a long and bitter history between the Moabites and the Israelites. There was enmity. There was endless border disputes. And they were deeply pagan. Here's a little section of Numbers, the 25th chapter, that describes them. While Israel was staying at Shittim, that's in Moab, the people began to have sexual relations with the women of Moab. That's the NRSV. In the ESV, it's a little harsher. It says the people began to whore with the women of Moab. These invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. Thus Israel yoked itself to the Baal of Peor, that was the god of Moab, and the Lord's anger was kindled against Israel. That's what it's like in Moab. So these people are stuck between a rock and a hard place, Ruth and her family. There's what we've already described that's going on in Israel, and then you have this other situation over in Moab. But at least in Moab, there's food at this point in time. Although their expectations would have to be extremely low. They're Israelites, right? They're strangers in a strange land. It's interesting that the Hebrew word for stranger is ger, G-E-R, ger. And it means itinerant, homeless. That's what they're going to be. They are going to be ger in Moab. They would be subject to really a rigidly enforced social distancing. They would not be accepted into Moabite society. They would live on the margins of the social system. They would truly be quarantined. They would be living rough in the fields. If they were lucky, they would gain work harvesting in the fields. But at least they had each other for a while. For a while. One by one, the three men die over 10 years of hard scrabble existence, the father, then the sons. Piece by piece, the family's world crumbles. Death pursues them. Love is lost to them. It's a hard, hard existence, a hopeless existence. And finally, it ends up just being Naomi and her two Moabite daughter-in-laws living there on the edge. Things turn desperate. Things turn ugly. And so Naomi decides to return to Bethlehem. She's heard now that there is food in Bethlehem, and she's going to leave her daughter-in-laws behind to find new life in the only way possible for them, in new relationships, in new love. It's heartbreaking for her. It's a difficult decision, but it's the one she comes to responsibly. And as for Naomi herself, her heart can't even admit the possibility of a future. Even if I thought there was hope for me, she says, it would be an illusion. It would be an illusion. She voices the fear of all who have ever been crushed by life, all who have ever known loss and bitter bereavement. That's Naomi right there. Everything she once loved and cared for has been taken away from her. Turn back, my daughters, she said. It has been far more bitter for me than for you, because the hand of the Lord has turned against me. Notice what she sees. The hand of the Lord has turned against me. How many of us have said that in our deepest, darkest hours? God, where are you? Why is it this way? I tell you again and again about the Psalms, those Psalms of Lament. 73 Psalms out of 150 are Psalms of Lament, where the psalmist cries out bitterly, God, where are you? Why is it like this? Why is the world this way? It's not supposed to be. That's where Naomi finds herself. She sees herself as an embittered woman, abandoned by God, trapped in a brutal existence, living amongst the ruins of her life. She's at a dead end. She's out of hope. And many of us, I think, can testify that losing love can do that to you. can turn you bitter, can turn you hopeless. But I came here this morning not to bring you down. I came here this morning to say that if you're finding kinship with Naomi, I have good news for you. You see, this is only the first 14 verses of this book. We've got more to go, and God is not done with Naomi, and her story is far, far from over. In fact, things are about to take a surprising turn to the good, and that's where we're going to go next week, into that surprising turn, into that surprising God. A harsh and unpromising life will soon be enriched and made fruitful by God's grace, manifest in human love. You see, that's the point to this story. God is, at least on the page, is scarcely a player in the book of Ruth. But God is acting all the while through the human beings that appear in the book of Ruth and the ways that they interact with one another. And what we need to see right now today, if we're sitting here and we're feeling like brothers and sisters to Naomi in this particular moment, if we're feeling that our love is crushed, that our hope is gone, we need to see that blessing delayed is not blessing absent, ever. When the world seems forlorn and hopeless, as it does for Naomi, when God seems absent, when life seems empty, when relationships seem broken, when love feels lost, hold on. Hold on. That's the message of these opening verses in the book of Ruth. There's just no telling what our loving God may yet do, and there's just no telling who he might send in our way to do it. Keep your eyes open, keep your hope up, and trust in God. As we leave her this morning, Naomi has no thought in her aging mind for a baby. But then again, neither did the world on that first Christmas Eve. And she can't begin to imagine the possibility of a future. But then again, neither did the disciples as their dreams were nailed to that awful cross. Here's the thing. What Naomi's world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. And in the unimaginable grace of God, it's coming to her. Trust me, it's coming to her. If you can't wait for me, read the rest of the book this week. It's not coming perhaps as Naomi might wish, in the conspicuous form of an awesome miracle that overturns nature to bring her dead loved ones back to life. No, that's not going to happen here. If you want that, you have to read the story of Lazarus. But in the form of an improbable companion named Ruth. Ruth, by the way, means friend. And in an unforeseeable benefactor named Boaz. And we'll meet him too. The story tells us not to give up too quickly on the grace of God. Because the grace of God never gives up on us. It's here. It's right here. It's right here, right now. And the story tells us not to give up on love. It's here. It's right here. It's right here, right now. It is. It's here in the fellowship of our family of faith as we gather this morning in worship. It's here in the songs that we share and the prayers that we offer for one another. And it's here at this table right here, this table that we come to each month, this table where the one who was love incarnate reaches out to offer you and me new life and new hope so that we might leave here and go out into that world that is bereft of both and share it with them. That's our job as disciples of Jesus Christ. So I came here this morning to tell you that if you're struggling today, hold on. If your life seems barren, don't give up. If you're living among the ruins, hang in there. Love is not lost. The story is not over. Not Naomi's, not yours, not mine. Next week, I promise you, we'll see what the God who is love can do. We'll see that love, sweet love, that the song promises us. Amen.